One is a magical musical done at the height of its subject matter's popularity, the other an attempt to gain relevance during what may have been the franchise's lowest point. The Muppets, they remade it.
Hi, and welcome back to the third season of They Remade It. I'm your host, Stuart.
And I'm your host, Jacob, and that's right, this is the third season, the third year, not quite the third year, but for all intents and purposes, it's the third year.
Like two and a half, I guess.
Yeah.
First year we started, like, at some point mid-year, but it was good enough.
Yeah, we started around, I think, the end of March. The Oscars had just happened a few weeks before.
Yeah, so we were still kicking around the idea of, hey, look at all this shit that people keep making up, or remaking up, I should say.
Yes. And we did a first episode that's kind of hard to listen to now, because we talk about the plots at the same time, both of the plots at the same time, and comment on them.
I mean, we do that a bit now still.
To an extent. Now we try to get the plots out of the way at the beginning, and then they're like, okay, now let's talk about it.
Yeah, so we don't assume people know every detail about the thing already.
Right, yeah. Not everyone has seen what we're going out to. I mean, half the time we haven't seen these either, but
yeah, I'd say more than half the time.
Yeah.
At least for my case.
I try to pick things I haven't seen, but every now and then I, like today, I pick stuff I have seen just because I want to talk about it. So.
Ayo. Well, speaking of which, in the like month and a half or so gap it feels like we've had, anything in particular you have now seen, anything that has caught your eye for Christmas in the early 2020 season?
Yes, this is actually probably the most that I've watched. I mean, we had a larger break, but the most I've seen in between shows in a while.
Damn.
So for the most part I saw movies. I did watch one show on Netflix.
I'm willing to bet it's the same show I've watched.
Ooh, I wonder if it was.
I mean, is it a recent series?
I mean, yeah, but I usually watch really stupid shit.
Oh, okay, then maybe not. I've been watching I watched the thing that everyone's watched, but I'll let you finish first.
Oh, okay, now I think I know what you're talking about, but that is not mine.
Oh, okay, well then.
Okay.
I don't know why I assumed you would have watched it, given that I know you.
I watched Q, the Winged Serpent. I haven't seen that in a while, though. Because I am heavily in the animation community, not as an animator or a writer or anything, but that's what I prefer, so I follow a lot of those blogs. When this Green Eggs and Ham series came out, everyone was raving about it, and I was like, that is the dumbest fucking idea I have ever heard of.
It was a series?
Yes, on Netflix.
I thought...
13 episodes.
Oh, I thought they had just done, like, the one story, like, the one episode of a story, and they just made it into, like, a smaller, like, 90-minute thing.
Nope.
What?
It's a whole series.
Hell?
Who would have known that they could actually make a full season of a show based on a 9-page book about disliking discolored breakfast foods? But they did.
I mean, nothing surprises me anymore.
It's all about, like, espionage and wildlife endangerment, but I know. This sounds so stupid, but I actually enjoyed it. And the thing is that every episode, like, the core setting or idea revolves around just one line from the book. Like, there's the line, like, I will not eat them with a fox. So there's an entire episode about a fox guarding a hen house, and they gotta infiltrate for whatever reason. And the series is sort of structured like that, and it's actually a lot of fun. And, Michael Douglas is the main character.
I mean, fuck it, okay.
I don't have much to say on it except for that,
Weirdest timeline.
I do have to say, though, it was greenlit for a second season called, like, The Second Serving, and now I really don't know what they could possibly do. They already blew the gimmick of, like, including lines from the book and how they develop the show. They can't do that a second time. So I don't know what they're going to do. But that was, that was the only show that I watched. Now for movies. So I said I was going to see it in theaters during our last episode, and I certainly did. I saw Knives Out. It was, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I greatly enjoyed it. I really like it because a lot of those mystery style films are all about the twist ending and you trying to figure out the twist.
Mm-hmm.
But the ending in Knives Out, the ending itself isn't a twist. It's just every step of the way to get there is the twist.
Yeah,
when I don't know if this applies to everybody, but when I was sitting watching it, it was basically I would guess something and then the movie would prove me right. But then it would ask, okay, now what? And I'd be like, I don't know. I got to think about it a little more.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Like, why I liked it as well. And just the fact that in so many of those whodunits, the entire mystery has already occurred and now we're figuring it out after the fact. Whereas this one, it's actually like still going on. Like there are literal scenes that prolong the plot as we're moving along behind us where we don't see. So it's like, oh, it's like an actual active story rather than just like, oh, here's how this shit went down.
Exactly. And you know what? I have never been a huge fan of Daniel Craig's Bond. And I don't think it's necessarily the way he portrays him, but I also think it has to do with like the writing, and it's more action-packed than what I'm used to. Not to say that there wasn't action in old Bond films, but they were definitely more, I don't know. I feel like they became more, that's probably the best word for it. They became more streamlined, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But Daniel Craig in Knives Out, I love his character. He's got to be.
I know.
Him and Michael Shannon steal the movie for me. They're the best characters in the film.
Yeah, and like I kept hearing people complain about his accent and everything. It's like, I can confirm, as someone from that part of the world, that's a very accurate accent.
I didn't think it was bad.
Yeah, but then, I thought he fucking killed it with that whole thing.
Oh yeah, he was great.
Yeah. I'm glad to see him doing stuff outside of Bond, which, like, obviously he's going to be probably doing more of that since he's not going to be doing that anymore. But, like, he's actually a very verbose actor. He has a lot of shit going on. He's also very odd. He's kind of like, it's kind of like whenever people use Ryan Gosling in stuff outside of, like, really bland romances and everything where he just plays kind of deadpan. You actually open him up a bit. He's like, oh, this guy's kind of weird.
Who is this?
This is fun.
This isn't who I thought it was from all the other movies that I've seen, you know?
Yeah.
And so, that's great because that's I know he's done other stuff, but for the past, what, if not a decade, nearing a decade, Daniel Craig has just been Bond.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what we've all accepted. And I can't think of anything else major that I saw him in and have memory of, you know?
I think the only other thing I can think of is Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and even that one's okay, honestly.
Right. And you see, I saw that, and I remember him being in it, but I don't remember him leaving any sort of impact.
Right, exactly.
On me, at least.
I think that was also the point of his character. Like, he's just kind of, he was kind of more of a vehicle for the audience.
That's fair. More of a template for you to project onto.
Right, because ultimately it wasn't him that was the interesting part. It was the eponymous girl with the dragon tattoo.
Right, right. It was the titular girl. We all clapped when we saw the tattoo.
Hooray, I guess.
But that's sort of that. Also, I am keeping good on my word. I tried to do the Best Picture thing last year. It didn't work out so much. I said I wanted to do all of the main animated Disney films this time around. And I'm sort of keeping with that. I watched Snow White, Pinocchio, and Dumbo.
Yeah, nice.
All in this break. Fantasia comes between Pinocchio and Dumbo. I skipped over it, though, because it was after work one night. I was like, I'll put on a movie. Fantasia's like almost 2.5 hours. Dumbo's an hour. So I was like, I'll just watch Dumbo.
Yeah, that's a bit easier.
Yeah, so I have to go backwards for Fantasia, which is fine. It's more, you know, there's like no dialogue in the film outside of the conductor. So it's all music based. So that's something you can put on and watch occasionally while also doing something else, you know. So
I gotcha.
I'll have to find a bit for that. But yeah, I watched all of those. I forgot a lot about what happens in Pinocchio. It might be a dark horse for one of my favorite Disney movies.
Yeah, that's got some shit in it.
Yeah, just literally every character's a villain. The same kind of applies to Dumbo, but Dumbo's more so the world is your enemy. Pinocchio has physical evil beings, and there's like 10 of them.
Yeah, even the blue fairy is a little weird.
Yeah, she's a bit of a bitch sometimes, but...
Yeah, why give the nose thing, lady? What the hell?
And that only comes up once. I was surprised that stuck with people so much. I thought it played throughout the whole of the film. It's only that one scene. It doesn't happen any other time.
Yeah, I remember that as well. Like, it's kind of how a lot of fairy tales like that actually end up lining up. Like, they have, like with Cinderella, the whole idea of glass slippers and everything. It's like, it wasn't actually that big of a thing in the original story. It was like, oh, there's just, like, some shoes. Okay. it's always funny seeing all these things being like, oh, it's the big thing about it. It's like, it's actually not. It's actually just fairy tales being weird again.
Fairy tales be fairy tales, as they say.
Yeah. Because, like, it's some ancient story that's been retold orally, like, a billion times, and this one detail just got turned into some random bit. Like, oh, he happened to have a big nose, and that got turned into, like, a literal magic thing.
Mm-hmm. Actually, speaking of fairy tales, I'm not going to derail this too much, but I forgot I wanted to bring this up at the top of the show. But there's something I learned over the break that blew my mind because of how stupid I am and just not knowing information. But in 1932 Scarface, which we both really enjoyed, Tony's original boss before he takes over, Johnny Lovo, is played by Osgood Perkins, who did a lot of stuff in old Hollywood. His son is Anthony Perkins, who was Norman Bates in Psycho, which for some reason I knew both of those actors, but I never connected that.
Oh.
So they're related.
Damn.
And a kicker, Anthony Perkins, either his son or his grandson, I don't remember which, but I think it's his son, is the director of the upcoming Gretel and Hansel, releasing January 31st, which we talked about in our end-of-year show.
What the fuck?
So he's a director.
It's fucking Hollywood, man.
Yeah, just the lineage there. I hadn't even thought about it, but I heard something about Osgood Perkins and Anthony Perkins being related, and I looked into it. I was like, we covered him in Scarface. We just mentioned Gretel and Hansel in the end of year, and Anthony Perkins in Psycho, like Psycho, notorious remake. We could totally cover that on the show. It just, in my mind, it made this big ball.
The bag of snakes that is Hollywood.
Yes, we gotta firmly grasp it. But, yeah, no, that was a huge sidebar, but you just made me think of it talking about fairy tales.
Yeah, sure, no problem.
So, I have a couple other things that I've watched. I'll go through them really quickly. I watched Detective Pikachu, and I watched Joker, which I joked about finally sitting down and watching both of those in our end-of-year show last year, and I did. I actually did do that.
And?
Joker was okay. Detective Pikachu was a lot of fun.
Alrighty, yeah.
I don't have much else to say on them.
Yeah, I really do think people are kind of going on about Joker just a little too much.
Like, yeah, and I mean, I understand to an extent why, but I also don't.
There
was a tweet I saw, I don't remember her name, but a woman made on Twitter. Well, where else would you make a tweet? But it was about Joker, and she's like, I'm glad that so many people are really enjoying Joker and experiencing film this way, but damn, a lot of you are acting like a single cinematic masterpiece has never occurred.
Yeah.
In the history of film until 2019's Joker.
Yeah, it's like, okay, it was pretty cool, and it's cool to see another believable portrayal of a comic book character. We haven't really had a good one of those for a while.
Yeah. But
still, it's a little weird.
I will also say, I would like more films about antagonists in sort of a similar way. They don't all have to be parodies of Martin Scorsese films.
Yeah.
But, you know, something about... That's a
very good way of putting it, actually.
Something about Penguin, or, like, how Scarecrow got started. You don't even have to stick to just Batman. I don't know. Something about Cheetah would be cool. You can do whatever you want.
I know that the new Batman movie that's coming out has had most of its cast announced. I know it's going to have Penguin in it and Riddler and stuff. So
Birds of Prey?
No, or different another one. One with Robert Pattinson as Batman, Bruce Wayne.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it's got the actor that plays Gollum, he's going to be Alfred.
Anthony Serkis?
Yes.
Really? Okay.
I'm pretty sure. But I know that
Andy Serkis.
I think Colin Farrell is going to be Penguin.
Okay.
And then the Riddler is going to be like that one weird guy from There Will Be Blood.
He's in other Sugar?
What? No.
That's Country for Old Men. I always get those two titles confused.
Yeah, that's a character from it as well. Hang on. I'm going to look that up real quick. But
I would be very interested. I haven't seen There Will Be Blood.
That's pretty good. Paul Dano, which I think is actually a really good fit for Riddler. That guy's so weird.
Okay.
So that's coming out. I'm pretty sure there's gonna be a few other villains, but I can't remember the actors. And I just gotta say, and just to avoid putting on even more of a sidebar, but just to, I've had kind of a vindication moment recently that the recent CW series is like that did all the various extra DC shows like Arrow, The Flash, Supergirl, all that shit.
Ooh,
recently had a big like crossover event and everything, and they basically confirmed outright that in this they're having all of the various DC universes crossover, like the Ezra Miller version of The Flash made a cameo at the end of the final episode of it. So that basically confirmed, oh, there's actually going to be a tangential connection to all these other movies. And it basically confirmed outright, hey, we're doing multiple universes with all these movies now, so we can actually have some creative license. We can have all these movies, and they don't have to explicitly connect. I'm so happy. Like, they even had a moment where they were showing off like all the various Earths and everything. Like, they were showing other DC series that are happening on entirely different dimensions. They even showed fucking the Green Lantern movie in one of them. So I was like, fucking okay. Outright acknowledging that movie for the first time outside of a Deadpool movie.
The movie whose antagonist is just a big floating piece of shit.
Yep.
Okay, sure.
So yeah, I'm just happy because, like, we get to have creative license with this universe again. It's like, let's just do this shit.
It's about time. And seriously, I beg of you, everyone out there, give me more antagonist movies based around antagonists. And I don't mean like the Suicide Squad. I don't even necessarily mean Birds of Prey, even though I'm looking forward to it. I like origin stories, just not for characters that we've had 10 origin stories for. So come on, Hollywood. Yeah.
I want to see a good Mr. Freeze one.
That would be great. Mm-hmm. As long as they stick to the Batman the Animated Series portrayal of him.
Yeah.
As opposed to the Jewel Thief, the guy that just like jewels.
Oh, you know?
Give him his wife. Give him his frozen wife.
Yeah. Poor bastard.
He needs something to hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
Not to get hugely sidebarred,
back to it.
No, that's okay. I have two more things. I'll go through them really quick because they are in line with this week, and that is on Disney Plus, because Disney Plus has all of the Muppet films except for three of them, I believe. I saw The Great Muppet Caper, which is the sequel to the first Muppet movie, and I watched...
Okay, damn it, wait, hang on. Real quick, did they seriously have both of the movies that we're doing today on Disney Plus?
Yes, they did.
Son of a bitch!
The Muppets are a big part of Disney Plus. They have an entire Muppet collection.
Oh, god damn it. I rented them this time. Fuck.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have told you.
I didn't think about it. Shit.
Yes, they did have both of them on there, which was handy because the copy of the 1979 Muppet movie I have was skipping, so I had to go to Disney Plus.
Oh, well then.
I
feel so stupid.
It's okay. But yes, I watched The Great Muppet Caper, sequel to the first Muppet movie, and I, for the first time, watched Muppets Most Wanted, which is the sequel to the second Muppets movie we're talking about today. And I just have really one thing about either of them. For the Great Muppet Caper, it's okay. I think the pacing is all wrong. They literally stop the plot and have a musical number about riding bikes, and the whole cast rides bikes before they continue. And like the main crux of the plot doesn't happen until 20 minutes and before the movie ends. So it feels like the description on Disney Plus is giving away the end of the movie. So yeah, big pacing problems. And Muppets Most Wanted is okay, but it's another crime movie.
Yeah, it's like there's only so much of that you can do. There's only so much that can be improved by the Muppets. Like, we hit the pinnacle with the Muppets Christmas Carol, and that's about it.
Pretty much. I mean, especially when they've already done before. They did The Great Muppet Caper, which was about burglary and stealing jewels, and then Muppets Most Wanted is about a jewel thief. It's like the same thing that they already did.
What is it with movies and jewel thieving? Like, seriously.
People like shiny things, I guess.
It really does always come back down to it.
It could be worthless, but if it's shiny, I want it.
Yeah.
But the one thing I do like about that movie is that it starts out literally where the very end of the 2011 Muppet movie ended, where everyone's on the street and they're all starting to go home, and then they realize the camera crew's still there. They're like, oh, we got another movie, I guess. And then they start singing a song about them getting a sequel. And oh. Near the end of the sequel song, it shows Dr. Bunsen Honeydew at a desk, and he's like, not to be a stickler, but this is actually the 7th sequel to our original movie. And I don't know, I like that line.
That's actually pretty good. I like that. It's like we got put in charge of the script.
Yeah, you just be as pedantic as possible before the internet gets to it.
Yeah.
It's like, look, I know you guys are going to complain, but hear me out. But that is all I have been watching.
Alrighty. I have watched significantly less that I can think of. Like, around Christmas, we watch the usual things. We watch, not Love, actually, The Holiday. We watch The Holiday, which I've never been a huge fan of, but it's whatever. And The Grinch, which, you know, classics. Beyond mm-hmm. that, in my own time, I watched, the series that I mentioned was The Witcher, which...
Yes, everyone's been watching.
Everyone's been watching, I know. But I, you know...
Except for me.
I had a bit of prior love for it just because of the video games, and then as a result of hearing it was getting a series, I started listening to the audiobook of the original stories. It's pretty freaking spectacular, I think. And lots of people have come to this conclusion as well, but it's been unfairly compared to, like, Game of Thrones and everything, just because everyone's like, oh, we miss Game of Thrones. It's like, fucking shut up. It wasn't that good to begin with. And so, like, this one came in being like, hey, you know all that shit that Game of Thrones was doing where, like, oh, everyone's really actually evil and everyone would be evil at the drop of a hat? The Witcher came in and was like, actually, no, it's easy to be evil, but you owe it to yourself and everyone around you to be a decent human being. Shut the fuck up.
Ooh, a good lesson.
Yeah, it's like, it just pretty much bashes over the head with, don't be an asshole, don't be racist, here's some cool monsters. That's about it. So I'm loving it a whole bunch. Although the new season won't come out until 2021, so that sucks. But, you know, still excited to see where it goes.
That's cool. I know you really like The Witcher. I saw you had for a bit been replaying some of Wild Hunt, or maybe doing some DLC on it.
Yeah, I'm probably going to keep replaying it here relatively soon. but yeah. So I did that, and then, to my knowledge, the only one that I can actually remember, I watched The King on Netflix, which that one kind of hit headlines a little while back. It's starring Timothée Chalamet. It's got some other various people in it that I've seen other places, but I couldn't place their names. It's basically just detailing the early days of Henry V during the Hundred Years' War. Gotta say, kind of dull, because, like, the main crux of it centers around, like, the Battle of Agincourt, which is a pretty significant battle in the Hundred Years' War, but having A, been a student of history and be kind of bored throughout most of that movie, there were just a lot of points where I was just like, what? It's like there's just so many random bits and pieces. Like, there's a major figure in the war that in the movie dies at that battle in a pretty lame way. He's like the Prince of France. He dies at that at the battle, and it's like that blatantly did not happen. And so it's just weird to see all these kind of simplifications of it. I'm like, this is pretty lame. And like, it had flooded Tumblr for a while because they love a good twink character, which like Timothy Chalamet is. So,
oh my God.
Yeah. So it was okay. I thought the shooting with like the camera work and everything was decent, but beyond that, I couldn't really recommend it. It was pretty boring.
I wonder if it's just trying to get in on that royalty fixation that we've had since The Crown has come out.
Yeah, that's probably it. It's pretty lame. And it also, like, you know, it also pre-whitewashes the history of Henry V, where it kind of portrays that he does some pretty bad things, but it portrays him as, like, oh, they were justified. Whereas, in reality, he was described as being both a hero to England and a complete monstrosity. Like, he was a nasty motherfucker.
Well, he kept the carriages running on time, so he was an okay guy.
Yeah, he knew he died young as well, so you know.
Ah, that'll sell it.
So yeah, that's a
real James Dean.
That's
move.
About it. I don't think I've watched any, if I've watched anything else, it hasn't been anything of huge note. So that's pretty much it.
All right. Well, with that being said, we might as well just dive right into this.
Yeah, we already mentioned it in passing, so.
Oh yeah, quite a few times. We're ready.
Yeah, let's do this shit. It's been 30 minutes.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows? And what's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, but only illusions. And rainbows have nothing to hide. Dreamers and me.
All right, so due to the nature of the Muppets, before each of these, I'm going to just list off an actor and or performer, rather, and then all of the Muppet characters that they play before I start the movie, and then during the cast list, or not the cast list, but the plot of the film, any human actors I will outright name. Just because the Muppets at this point are kind of their own identities, so it would be much easier to just portray them as themselves in the plot, if that makes any sense.
I gotcha. It'd be hard to list all of the names that each person did.
Right, every single time a new character shows up. Mm-hmm. It'd be very frustrating. So, starting that off, Jim Henson is Kermit, Rolf the Dog, Dr. Teeth, Waldorf, Swedish Chef, and Link Hogthrob. Frank Oz is Miss Piggy, Fozzie the Bear, Animal, Sam the Eagle, and Marvin Suggs. Jerry Nelson is Floyd Pepper, Crazy Harry, Camilla the Chicken, Robin the Frog, and Lou Zealand. Richard Hunt is Scooter, Statler, Sweetums, Beaker, and Janice. And finally, Dave Goles is the Great Gonzo, Zoot, Dr. Bunsen Honeydew, and Dog Lion. And with that said, we will start with the reading for The Muppet Movie 1979. Firstly, the film opens up at a screening of the Muppet movie with the cast of the Muppets watching in a theater, as Kermit informs his nephew Robin that the film is more or less how the Muppets got started. The actual movie begins in the bayou, where Kermit is playing banjo and singing Rainbow Connection. An agent paddles by, played by Dom DeLuise, and informs Kermit of a casting call for Frogs in Hollywood. So Kermit hits the road. Before making it out of town, though, he catches the eye of one Doc Hopper, Charles Durning, and his assistant Max, Austin Pendleton, who are in charge of a chain of Frog Legs restaurants that isn't doing so well. Hopper desperately wants Kermit as his spokesman. Kermit runs into Fozzie doing stand-up at a dive bar not too long after and picks him up for Hollywood. They soon hit the road in Fozzie's Uncle Studebaker and eventually wind up lost at a church where Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem and Scooter have set up shop. They receive a screenplay on Kermit to catch them up from the film's plot and paint the duo's Studebaker while they sleep so that they can avoid capture once they leave. On the road again, they crash into Gonzo, who is currently a plumber, and his girlfriend Camilla the Chicken. Gonzo agrees to go with the duo on their journey, and the group takes their two broken vehicles to a car lot run by Milton Berle. Well, I don't remember the character's name, but the actor is Milton Berle. And with the help of Sweetums, who's working there, they receive a new vehicle for no charge. Arriving at a fair, the group meets up with and picks up Miss Piggy, who falls for Kermit, and vice versa. They leave the fair to chase after Gonzo, who has been swept away by balloons, and eventually stop for the night, with Miss Piggy and Kermit having dinner. Eventually, after Piggy has been absent for a time and Kermit sings a duet with Rolf the dog, who shortly will be joining the party, Kermit learns that Miss Piggy has been kidnapped by Doc Hopper. He goes to save her, but they are both tied up by the men. Doc Hopper brings in Professor Crassman, played by Mel Brooks, who wants to melt Kermit's brain and make him subservient to Hopper, but Piggy is not having it, breaking free and beating everyone up but Hopper and Max, as they have left by this point. Piggy, however, quickly gets a job offer and leaves for all of 5 minutes as the gang hits the road and soon finds her hitchhiking on the side of it in the desert. Their car breaks down and they all have a pity party in said desert, only for the Electric Mayhem to show up at the last minute and rescue them, as they all read the screenplay and knew that everyone was going to be in trouble. Getting back on the road, the Muppets are informed by Max, who is portraying a cop at this time, that Doc Hopper has hired an assassin to kill all of them, and Kermit is tired of running. He agrees to meet them in what is supposedly a ghost town, but once they arrive, they find Dr. Bunsen Honeydew and Beaker are there with a makeshift lab. Kermit confronts Hopper, and when all seems lost, Animal, who is now gigantic due to ingesting Honeydew's growth pills, scares all of the men off. Everyone continues to Hollywood, where they make it in to see an executive, played by director of Citizen Kane, Orson Welles, who signs them all to a rich and famous contract. They begin filming a movie inside of the movie that is already inside of another movie, and then end with a rendition of Rainbow Connection. Okay, and starting off for The Muppets 2011, the performers for The Muppets shift around a little bit due to some passings, including that of Jim Henson, and other people just retiring from the game. So we have Steve Whitmore, who is Kermit, Beaker, Statler, Rizzo, Link Hogthrob, and the Newsman Muppet. Eric Jacobson is Miss Piggy, Fozzie the Bear, Animal, Sam the Eagle, and Marvin Suggs. Dave Goles is Gonzo, Dr. Bunsen Honeydew, Zoot, Beauregard, Waldorf, and the Kermit Muppet. Bill Beretta is Swedish Chef, Rolf the Dog, Dr. Teeth, Pepe the Prawn, Bobo, Foozie Bear, who is another Muppet, and the Muppet version of Gary, who is a main character. David Rudman is Scooter, Janice, Miss Poogie, and Wayne. And Matt Vogel is Sergeant Floyd Pepper, Camilla the Chicken, Sweetums, 80s Robot, Lou Zealand, Uncle Deadly, Ruwolf, who is another Muppet, and Crazy Harry. Oh, and finally, Peter Lintz is Walter, who is a Muppet introduced at the top of the movie. And now we will get into The Muppets 2011, directed by James Bobbin. So, starting off, brothers Gary, played by Jason Segel, and Walter have grown up inseparable and even live together. They both have a fondness for the original Muppet Show, but Walter does especially. Gary is soon leaving for Los Angeles with his decade-long girlfriend Mary, played by Amy Adams, and invites Walter to come along because the Muppet Studio is in Los Angeles. Mary doesn't really care for this plan. However, they all soon make it to LA and go on a tour of the worn-down and nearly abandoned Muppet Studio. While there, Walter overhears a plan by Tex Richmond, played by Chris Cooper, and his henchmen Uncle Deadly and Bobo, in that they are going to, instead of building a Muppet Museum out of the studio as they promise, bulldoze it and drill for oil. All of this will happen unless the Muppets can raise $10 million by the time the contract they signed in the first movie expires. Distraught by this, the trio visits Kermit at his manor and convinces him to get the gang back together. They pull Fozzie from a gig in Reno, singing with a knockoff group called the Muppets, mentioned at the start. Gonzo from a plumbing empire he has built for himself. Animal from an anger management support group, which Jack Black is his sponsor at. and the rest of the Muppets come via montage. That is, except for Piggy. So they eventually, to Kermit's dismay, go to Paris where she works for a fashion magazine. She refuses, however, and because her and Kermit had a falling out in their relationship, but it's clear that the two still have feelings for one another. So Kermit's response to her refusal is to replace her with Miss Poogy of the Reno Muppets. The gang make it back to LA and shop their telethon around at various networks, only eventually getting accepted at CDE as their executive, played by Rashida Jones, has a vacant spot to fill 2 days from now. The gang go fix up their old studio and prepare to practice for the gig in 2 days' time, during which Miss Piggy returns and kiss out Miss Poogy. But for the gang, not for Kermit. Kermit tells Walter to get an act together and attempts to find a celebrity host for the event. Gary, meanwhile, decides to help and informs Mary to go around sightseeing by herself, forgetting their anniversary. Kermit's having trouble finding a guest, so he asks Tex Richmond to just give the studio back to the Muppets. He laughs and says no, also informing them that he not only owns the building, but their identities if they can't come up with the money. Kermit goes home dejected, and Miss Piggy rallies everyone together to kidnap Jack Black to be their celebrity host. It is during this time that Gary realizes Mary went back home upset since he forgot their anniversary, and he follows her to repair their relationship. The gang convinces Kermit to go to the show now that they have a guest host, and the telethon begins. It starts out initially as a disaster, with no one in the audience but a hobo and some hobo Muppets, and Gary and Mary, seeing this on their TV, then go back to Los Angeles in order to help out. All of the acts are being performed, and slowly but surely celebrities show up to help work the telephones, with money being raised over time. Richmond attempts to thwart the telethon, only to be stopped by Gary, Mary, and Uncle Deadly in different parts. Unfortunately, near the very end, and after Walter displays his talent for whistling to get them just to $10 million, Tex Richmond breaks the power line, cutting them short on their funds. As they've lost, they are forced to leave, but not before Kermit gives a rousing speech stating that they are family and will work from the ground up again. They go outside and are greeted by thousands of fans, and Walter is accepted as a Muppet. They all sing, and the film ends. During the credits, we see Gary propose to Mary, and we see that Tex Richmond gives them the studio back because Gonzo gives him a head injury, which kind of invalidates the point of the ending by not having that happen in the film, but the que sera sera.
I suppose that's your lot.
Oh, yes, that is all.
That is all. No more. No weird after-credits scenes. No, you know, Sam Jackson Muppet showing up.
No Sam Jackson Muppet walking up to Sam the Eagle and being like, you're accepted.
Like, hooray!
I'm making a team.
I'm here to talk to you about the Henson Initiative.
Ooh, I'd watch that.
That'd be pretty fun.
Yeah, Sam the Eagle, Super Grover, that raccoon from Bear in the Big Blue House, they're all there. Emmett Otter.
Audrey.
Oh yeah, Audrey 2's there. It's fun. It's fun.
Yeah.
But I guess but I'll
I suppose
go and
it's
do...
time for the circle moment.
Yeah, go into full circle here. So, while not huge, this is the biggest full circle that we've had in a while, so I'm going to try to go through it as effectively as possible. Firstly, we have Charles Durning, who was Doc Hopper in the Muppet movie, 1979, and he was uncredited as an immigration officer in 1983's Scarface. We have Cloris Leachman, who was Miss Tracy in the Muppet movie, and she was also Frau Blücher in Young Frankenstein. We have Madeline Kahn, who was an Els Lizo patron in the Muppet movie and was Elizabeth in Young Frankenstein. And we have Mel Brooks, who was Professor Max Crassman in the Muppet movie and was Victor Frankenstein in Young Frankenstein.
They really did like that whole Mel Brooks scene, didn't they?
Oh, they really did. They gave it much more time than it really needed, but, I mean, it's Mel Brooks. But, yeah, I wanted to do all three of those together because three people from Young Frankenstein... in the Muppet movie.
It's got to be a record for all in one film.
Probably. It's possible.
Yeah.
I'd have to look into it. But that is, of course, not the end, as we have Dom DeLuise as Bernie the Agent in the Muppet movie, and he was Jeremy in both The Secret of Nim and The Secret of Nim 2, Timmy to the Rescue. Dom DeLuise being a favorite of both Mel Brooks and of Don Bluth. Elliot Gould was the beauty contestant compere in the Muppet Movie, and he was Reuben Tishkoff in the Ocean's series, last one being Ocean's 8. James Coburn was the El Slezo Cafe owner in the Muppet Movie, and he was Harlan Hartley in The Nutty Professor 1996, the Eddie Murphy version. And finally, for the Muppet Movie, we have Steve Martin, who was the insolent waiter. He was Orin Scrivello, the dentist in Little Shop of Horrors. Both movies with ties to Frank Oz and the Henson Company.
Again, just the bag of Hollywood, the bag of snakes of Hollywood.
The bag that is Hollywood. And you know what? While we're in full circle, I don't have this written down, but I mean, Frank Oz was a big player in the Muppet Movie, not just as a performer, but as the voice of, like, Miss Piggy and all that. And he was the lawyer, Alan Stevens, in Knives Out.
Oh, so, yeah.
There you go.
Well, that's good.
Before I forget that.
That's something.
Yeah. And for the 2011 Muppet Movie, for all of the celebrities they have, we only have one connection here to something we have already done. That being Jack Black, who was Ian Lamont in 1997's The Jackal.
Of all the things.
Of all the things he's done, that's the one we remember. He gets blown up.
Yeah. That's pretty good, though.
That's the one part of the movie I enjoyed.
Yeah.
Well, that's not fair. I like J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
Anyways. Yeah. So you wanna talk for a little bit? Maybe give me your history with the Muppets while I take a drink and not die.
Yeah, sure. The classic dry mouth that comes along with this. It's been a while.
Yes, I edit, but not that much.
Yeah. Man, this really is one of those particular cases because, like, we mentioned it before the start of the recording, but it's one of the situations where one of us knows everything there is to know about a subject. And the other one knows basically nothing. I am of the nothing. I basically skipped by Muppets entirely. Like, it was the weirdest thing when I was growing up, because I'd seen the Muppets Christmas Carol when I was a little kid. I think I watched it with my grandma. And that one was a huge one. I thought it was hilarious. It was the, you know, first time I'd seen Michael Caine and everything. That was fun. And it just... Beyond that, anytime I'd see the Muppets in other situations or in other movies or anything, because, like, you know, I'd be homesick, I'd see, like, oh, Muppets Go to Treasure Island or whatever the fuck that one was. And I'd just be like, oh, it's those guys again. They seem to get around a lot. And it took me literal years before I realized, oh, they had a show? So, like, it was always weird, like, you know, seeing them being referenced on either... on other shows or on, like, Sesame Street or that sort of thing, because, like, I didn't know there was a connection at all. I was just like, okay, so these are just, like, it's kind of like a VeggieTales kind of thing. Like, they, every now and again we'll see, like, some shows with them or, like, some TV shows with them, but that's nothing huge. I didn't know the actual level of significance they actually had.
Right, you're watching Sesame Street and Kermit shows up to talk to Oscar and you're like, who the hell is the frog?
It's like, oh, it's the guy from the Christmas movie, but the puppet one. That's that's fun. And so, like, I'll see him referenced on, like, late night shows and, like, other TV shows and everything. And it's like, well, I know he's something, but I didn't think he was anything huge. I was like, oh, I thought it was like a Sesame Street thing, essentially. But I didn't know there was a whole other thing going on. And so I pretty much skirted by that show entirely. Like, I'll see clips of it now and again nowadays, but beyond that, there's really, I really know nothing about it. So, I gotta say, having seen these two movies, I still don't have a huge opinion of it all. Like, I'm not huge on it, I'll be real. It's just kind of like, this is the thing. And it's one of those situations where, you know, I'm sure if I had the context, I'd enjoy it more. But it's going back to, like, the idea of, we talked about, I think, on the year review, like, talking about how, like, Endgame was up for an Oscar nom and everything, like, movie of the year or something. And, like, talking about the fact of, could this thing hold up if you had none of the context for it? And the answer, obviously, for Endgame was a blatant no. But... Even in this case, I felt kind of a similar situation where I'm like, oh, it's talking about, like, oh, these fun origin stories about these characters and everything. Like, oh, how it's probably played up more than it would actually be. or it's these ridiculous setup of how these guys came to be, and I'm just like, I didn't know who these guys were beforehand, so this is my only frame of reference. So to me, this is the, without a doubt, canon version of these characters, and I'm like, okay. Like, whatever.
Right.
It's like seeing, like, I'm sure there's in-jokes and other things that I see that are going on that I just don't notice at all. It's just like, okay, yeah. Okay, so there's a dog, he's playing piano in a bar for some reason, okay.
Yeah, it, to a degree, I guess the most it is, you know what, so there actually is some of that. I was going to combat you on, not like fight you on that, but you actually do have a point, and I'll go into that. But, I mean, yeah, the context for the Muppets is, they started in 76, and I think they had finished their fourth season before this movie came out. So, at that time, it was a very popular show. Everyone knew who they were, so the origin story in the movie, as far as anyone knows, is the origin story. It's not like they have an origin on the show, and then the movie makes fun of it. So,
gotcha.
At least their origin in the movie is canonical to an extent.
Well, even, like, I think even the idea of it is kind of the thought process of, you know, in TV shows, like, you know, and I've seen, and obviously this is a trend that isn't new. Like, in TV shows, they'll have a show that's going for a while, then all of a sudden they'll have a flashback episode where it kind of shows, where it shows their origin, and it seems kind of funny given your context, like the context of already having watched the show up to that point. Like, you'll see, oh, this is where that character came up with that catchphrase, well, hey, kind of thing. But imagine doing that without having any of the context prior, so you literally are just coming into it with the in-joke flashback, where it's like, well, I don't really have anything to base this off of, so this is just the beginning of the story for me. This is literally just me watching the beginning of the series,
right,
as is, not as like an after the fact thought, you know.
I can see that. Yeah, and I guess I do agree with you to an extent. Having seen the Muppet Show, I don't think there's a lot of that in the Muppet movie.
Right,
but you wouldn't know that if you wouldn't know that had you not seen the show. You would assume there's all these in jokes, but the characters' personalities, I guess, are where that sort of lies. Like you mentioned, Rolf the dog playing piano in the bar. He's not necessarily known for being in a bar, but if you watch the show, you know that that's his shtick, is that he plays the piano. So that's why that's why they find him playing the piano, is because that's what he does on the show.
Right.
And the one, I guess, that's really strange, maybe not for you because you also watched the 2011 one, so you know about his character, but Gonzo has a sort of a B-plot arc in the 79 one, where at the fair he gets these balloons, he goes into the sky, and then for the rest of the movie, he's like, I want to be up in the sky. He even has a song about returning to the sky. It's like, okay, what does that have to do with anything? But if you've seen the show, you know he's a stuntman that gets in a cannon and shoots into the air.
Oh, okay.
So that's context you don't have.
Yeah, like, because that, like, that's the situation where I was like, what the fuck is the point of this song?
Right.
Like, I know it's a whole thing about, like, dreaming and shit, but, like, at the same time, this is weirdly eloquent.
So I guess that's probably the biggest one in that movie, is if you don't know that Gonzo is this stuntman that's always sailing through the air, you don't know why any of this is happening.
Gotcha.
And yeah,
it's just weird to think about.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, to a degree. And they didn't plan this. I know they didn't plan this because Muppets from Space, which is another movie, didn't come out until the mid to late 90s. But in that movie, Gonzo learns, because he's like a what is it? He's not an animal. He's just like a what is that thing. He learns he's an alien and that there's like a race of other Gonzo-like beings. So they didn't have the foresight to plan that, I bet. But the song also has extra meaning if you think about it that way, too. That, oh, well, he's like from space and he wants to return there.
Oh, that's fun.
And that, I think, is neat. Yeah. And I doubt they planned it, but
I'm sure they may have been, like, theories of it, like, early on with their, like, because I'm sure, because, you know, they had all the other characters all playing out, like, oh, it's Kermit the Frog, it's Miss Piggy, and all that sort of thing. And then they just have Gonzo, and they're just like, what is this character that we have? And someone probably just goes, alien? Okay. And they just roll with it. It's like the theory, it's like the, you know, how Dan Aykroyd justified how all the, like, all the weird ghosts in Ghostbusters are just the ghosts of aliens.
Yeah, which, you're a lunatic, Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, you fucking weirdo. Yeah.
We should buy a bottle of his skull vodka and just drink it, see how it is.
Let's take it to the Sonic premiere.
Do you think the Alamo Draft House will let us bring our own stuff?
I mean, we could sneak it in.
I'm okay, sure, yeah, let's plan on that.
I'm sure if we told them what it was, they'd probably be like, all right.
Oh, this, it's nothing. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. I'm sure if we told them, it's like, okay, this is Dan Aykroyd's legit fucking vodka that he's insane about, as he is about many things. And then we just told them the whole thing, and they'd probably be like, you know what? It's Alamo Draft House. This shit's weird. Let's, fine, have it.
He spit in this bottle. Do you know how much this is worth?
Oh my god.
So I do have one thing that I do want to bring up about the 79 film, which I've seen both of these movies before, but I hadn't thought about it until this. And this is probably going to mean literally nothing to you, but this is supposed to be how the Muppets met and how they got started, but Beaker is in the movie. And if you'd watch the show, Beaker doesn't appear until the second season of The Muppet Show. He didn't exist in the first season. Dr. Bunsen Honeydew was there, still inventing things, but he tested all of them on himself. And eventually he's like, I'm getting an assistant to blow up because I'm sick of blowing up. So that's a minor inconsistency. I mean, that's like a level of pedants that no one cares about.
Right.
Like they had to put Beaker in the movie. He's one of the most famous Muppets at this point. Like he screams and he gets blown up. That's his whole shtick. But if this is how they met, I mean, even Kermit claims more or less. So they build it into the movie that it's not exactly how they met. But
right, exactly.
Beaker shouldn't be there. Anyways,
we haven't even gotten into the 2011 one, I guess.
No, we haven't.
Which, like, I gotta say, God, I'm not a fan of Jason Segel.
He has a very not punchable face, but slappable face. I think I want to hit him.
Yeah, I feel like if I knew him in real life, I'd want to punch myself. Like,
oh boy,
it's just like the situation where it feels like every moment with him would be just a cringe moment, which as it was in many cases in the film. It's just like Amy Adams in it. She's a treat as always. Like, you know, she can do whatever. Like, she's got such range. It's like, okay, yeah, you're believable in literally any context. But Jason Segel, I cannot get behind him. Like,
yeah,
just him having him around. I was just like, who has let this man child go unchecked? It's just,
and that's the thing. I know it's not just the character too, because I don't like him in like How I Met Your Mother either. I just don't like.
Yeah, exactly.
His acting, I guess, but his character being a big man baby does not help.
Yeah, no, he's playing to his strengths. Yeah.
Cutting and deep on Jason Segel.
I did actually pretty surprisingly like the main Muppet character whose name I forget now
for
the
2011. Walter,
thank you. I was surprised how much I did actually enjoy him. I thought that was going to be another cringy thing of, oh, it's a Muppet kid with just, like, all these heart of gold dreams and shit, where it's like, but then he actually ended up being a pretty dynamic character throughout everything. I was like, oh, okay, that's actually pretty good. So I kind of thought I was going to be kind of annoyed, like, the idea of having him as the main driving character versus the Muppets themselves, which I was like at first I was like, okay, this is just kind of dull. There's not a whole lot going on. But then as he kind of came into his own throughout the story, I started to actually enjoy his presence a lot more. And it kind of got to the point where I have such a weird opinion of the 2011 one, because so much of it is deliberately campy fun and everything. Like, it's deliberately like, oh, they're demolishing the place so that you can drill for oil in the middle of Hollywood.
Yeah, very.
And like, the guy's name is Tex Richmond and everything. So a lot of it I really just was like, there's a certain point where tongue-in-cheek just kind of starts to suck. It's,
yeah, you know what, I had a big problem with the drilling for oil plot, just because it's such an overdone, hackneyed thing. But you describing it as drilling for oil in the middle of Hollywood, I think I like it now.
Yeah, because like
ripping up a studio and drilling in the middle of...
It's like God. In the middle of fucking like Beverly Hills or some shit. And so I had such a weird opinion of it because, like, you know, I like Hackney, like deliberately Hackney as much as the next guy. But at a certain point, it does just get to be a point where it's like, are you guys doing this because it's deliberately poking fun, or are you doing it because it's easy? Because I just there's so many different jokes in it that just kind of fell flat for me that could have been so much punchier. Like the fact that I wish they had even more played up the idea of drilling for oil, because like it almost seems like such a passing thing. Like it doesn't even establish like, oh, it doesn't like show drilling crews literally getting ready to do everything. It's just kind of like, oh, drilling for oil, yeah, sure, that's what we're doing. And then it's just kind of passing at that point. The main crux of it is just the place is closing down and they have to save it. It's like, okay, you could have made up anything. You could have made up something slightly more believable to make it a bit more punchy. Or you could have taken the oil joke and taken it to the nth level to really make it funny. As it stood, kind of wishy-washy. And I felt that way about a lot of the jokes. Like, there was one where Kermit first shows up on screen. And, like, it's got the whole, like, dramatic backlighting. Like, oh, my God, it's Kermit. And they have, like, an angelic chorus in the background.
Oh, yeah.
And in the background, they show, a chorus troop driving in their bus. And I thought that could have been really funny if they didn't deliberately fucking focus the camera and, like, follow the bus as it went down the road. I was like, you guys could have just, like, had them in the background of the shot and, like, had it been like, oh, hey, that's funny. But rather, it's, look at the joke! Look at the joke! Look at the joke!
And we've talked about this on the show before, but that's like a certain level of trusting your audience, because they also have Kermit not reacting to it like, oh, that was weird, but they have him like stare at it and follow it a bit, and then catch himself and be like, what are you guys doing here? Like, he noticed it too.
Yeah.
So, and they do that in the first one, in the 1979 one as well. There's a bit of a runner near the start where Kermit is saying that Frog's giving you warts is a myth, and every time he says myth, a woman thinks he's saying miss, I guess, and is like, yes.
And oh yeah, no, myth, on the... myth, yes.
Yeah. And I think that's funny the first time they do it, but the second time they're in a car and he's saying it, and she appears from behind the billboard in the same getup she was in the tavern, and I was like, that's really funny. I think,
yeah, but I actually really like that.
It cuts back to Kermit and Fozzie looking at her, like acknowledging her existence. It's like, there's the joke, and I was like, no, they should not even care. I think,
yeah, and like I think it's, if it's done subtly enough, I think it's fine. I think even in that case where they acknowledge her, where they're like, what the, like, I think even that's pretty good.
At least they didn't focus on it for a long time or be like, what? Get out of
exactly.
here.
Exactly. But I think the thing with the chorus was, like, it could have been done a bit better. It just, there were a lot of moments like that, that it was kind of deliberately going into the joke a bit too hard, and it just kind of lost me. But all that being said, at least the 2011 one, like, had shit, like, happening. Mm-hmm. like, there was a plot and everything that I could follow, and it wasn't just like the kind of loose setup that they had going getting to Hollywood. Because like even that one established right at the end, there was really no conflict in that regard. Like obviously there was the Doc Hopper guy chasing after them, but even that one was kind of minor, because like the whole plot of it was meant to be, oh, we're trying to get to Hollywood, and there was like in the end no resistance when they got there. It was just like, yeah. It's like, hello, Orson Welles. And they're like, hello, here's your contract. Anyway.
Standard rich and famous contract for the Frog.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I liked how they expanded on that in the 2011 one, where it's like, oh, they literally have that same contract again. And it's like, here are the clauses of it. That's pretty fun. It is that weird balance of, does it take away from the spirit of things that they tried to make it more deliberate plot out of it? Or is it the fact that objectively it feels like a more cohesive film as a result, which I think also just comes back into the idea of, oh, I've never once seen a full episode of the Muppets, so I have an objective look at it, so I can't really say which one is objectively the better option, but I can say which one I objectively thought was better cohesion.
No, that's fair, and that's a good opinion to take. In fact, I mean, for the purpose of the show, you might be the better test case for this.
Right. Because, like, that's the significance of a remake.
Yeah, it's to grab an audience that hasn't seen it before and to usually make money. So
yeah, mostly make money.
Yeah. I mean, I think that works. And you're right about cohesion. You're right about cohesion. The only part of the plot that actually really does get on my nerves in the 2011 one is there's this whole thing about tearing up the studio and drilling for oil. We've talked about that. But then later, when Kermit and a few of the other Muppets go to meet with Richman at his office and ask for the studio back, he's like, not only am I going to own the ground of the studio, but I'm going to own your identity. And you're sort of like, well, what's the point of that? You're tearing the studio up for oil. Why do you need their identity? It's even, like, played with the fact that no one likes the Muppets anymore and no one remembers who they are. So why does Tex Richman even care? That part bothered me.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess, like, it was meant to just kind of be like an extra thing of, oh, you guys can't even do your Muppet thing even after I win. But I guess, like, again, it was another moment of it's so deliberately hackney that it's at a certain point comes back around to just being bad.
Exactly. I think that was the point. And then he has the very cringy rap number.
Yeah, because of course. Which, again, that itself, that in and of itself is deliberately hackney. It's like, yeah. I wish I knew where the quote came from, and I've said it so many times, especially on this show, but it's like, deliberately annoying is still annoying.
So, yeah,
I know you're doing it on purpose, and I know that's the entire point. That doesn't change the fact that you are doing it.
Yeah, that's a defense used a lot for, like, really obnoxious characters.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like, that's often cited as the downfall of Scrappy-Doo. It's like, you guys set out to make an annoying character, and you succeeded because he sucks.
It's not parody if you're just doing it. It's just bad. It's reference, and that just means you're just as bad, and you know it's bad, and you're still doing it. That's worse.
Exactly. Oy.
So, yeah. But, like, I feel like I've dominated kind of hard. Do you have any genuine general opinions about, like, kind of like, I guess I should say, you're the one with actual history behind the show and everything. Do you think the addition of more of a deep plot was better? Because, like, was the original one just more true to its original spirit? Because, I haven't seen the show. I don't know how the show's set up. I'm guessing it's, like, essentially just comedy skits strung together.
Okay, so, yeah, that's a good point. So, Muppet 2011 is much better at putting a cohesive plot together, and that's actually, it's better for the Muppet movies to have sort of that cohesive plot, because I mentioned it at the top of the show, but the first sequel, The Great Muppet Caper, is the first one that sort of had an overall plot. I mean, Muppet Movie is like, we gotta get to California, but that's about it, and then things just sort of happen during that. But in Muppet Caper, they tried to do a plot. And then they did Muppets Take Manhattan, and they got a bit firmer. And then they did, you know, Muppets from Space, Christmas Carol, Muppet Treasure Island. And they started building up these better stories. And the further down the road you get, the more solid the movies are. I mean, Christmas Carol and Muppet Treasure Island are, like, the Muppet movies that are remembered the most fondly.
Yeah, that's still my favorite version of the Christmas Carol.
Yeah, and I love Muppet Treasure Island. It's the first Muppet thing that I ever saw, and Tim Curry as Long John Silver was a fantastic acting casting choice.
Oh, yeah.
So, I think that is better. I think they should have gone for the plot like they did in 2011, because that's sort of where the films do better. 79 is a bit held up because it's coming fresh off the Muppet Show, which is not just a show with a bunch of skits like Laugh-In', but it's about the process of putting on a show. So they'll have a skit where two characters sing, or they'll have Fozzie tell jokes and then Statler and Waldorf heckle him from the balcony. But then you'll go backstage and Kermit will be trying to get the next act together, and the guest host is like Milton Berle, and he's like, hey, Kermit, the blue guy's annoying me, and they go to his dressing room. So there's behind-the-scenes stuff, too.
Okay, that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, and that works for a smaller format, but when you go into the film, it's hard to stretch that out. And that's why 79 has the very loose thread of we got to get to California, but then they have the small vignettes, like they go to the fair or the Electric Mayhem sing a song and paint the bus.
Oh, yeah.
And so it can feel kind of soupy at times, I think.
Yeah.
And I still like it. I much prefer the soundtrack to the 79 one to the 2011 one. I think the songs are better and more memorable.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, how do you... like? It's hard to beat Rainbow Connection just as just a classic song.
Yeah, unfortunately it lost, but it was nominated for Best Original Song that year at the Oscars, too.
Yeah.
Like
it's a bit hokey, just in general, but, like, still, it's a wonderful song.
Oh, yeah, it's great. I think my favorite song in the movie is... and I've been humming it all week, to be honest, like in the car ride to work, is Moving Right Along, which is the song Kermit and Fozzie sing in the car.
Yeah, that one's been in my head for a while, too.
I just like the fact that it's really enjoyable, and they're like, we're going to California. And eventually, the tempo doesn't change, the pacing doesn't change the song, but you can tell through the lyrics, it's like, we have no idea where we are.
Where the fuck we going?
I've never seen the sun set in the west, rise in the west.
That was probably the whole movie. I think my favorite sequence was just anytime they were actively traveling, like to the sound of Moving Right Along, because there was so many of just the funny jokes. It's like, I think we're in Saskatchewan now.
Yeah, they passed by a Mountie on a horse.
Yeah, because like it's kind of this like reminding me of, obviously it's not a callback, but it's reminding me of like Ice Age, whenever they're moving along, you have no earthly idea where they could actually be and where they actually started, because it's like, oh, here's the Old Faithful geyser, but now all of a sudden the next scene we're at Stonehenge. It's like,
yeah.
I love travel sequences like that just kind of take that whole idea of, oh, this whole cohesive thing and we're going from this point to this point and just going, fuck you, we're having fun.
We're going wherever we want.
Yeah, we're doing this for the side jokes, and that's it.
I think that is a line in the song where they're excited about California. Kermit goes, palm trees and warm sand. And then Fozzie goes, sadly, we just left Rhode Island. And Kermit's like, what? How did we get all the way up there?
It's like, where the hell are we? I don't even know where they... does it even establish where the movie starts? Because I'd assume somewhere in, like, either Florida or, like, Alabama or something.
I think it's in the Louisiana Bayou.
Louisiana, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it starts around New Orleans.
That would make a lot of sense with like the idea of frog legs and everything. Yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah, that plays. I didn't even think of that. That plays into Doc Hopper's character a lot too.
Yeah, and the more I think about it, the more I'm like, I'm pretty sure I've seen actual people from Louisiana that look like Doc Hopper.
The good old boy in the white suit.
Yeah, good old Nolan's boy.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's sort of my stand on it. I mean, if I'm gonna hold all the cards in front of me right now, I think that my personal favorite is the 79 version, just because of the heart and the soundtrack and things like that. But if we're talking pure structure and actually like playing to the character's strengths, I think 2011 does a better job of that. Yeah. It's like when I say that I'm not even going to go there because I can't think of an apt example right now, but it's me fully admitting that my nostalgia is going to drive that decision.
Yeah. It's just interesting to see how two different mindsets can go about these two things. Cause objectively, I agree with you for the most part. Like I think the 79 one is a bit more fun. It's just, like, genuine. I think that may also just be the idea of nostalgia that, you know, it's a 79 film. A lot of those movies just elicit just a natural feeling of whimsy in me, and I'm sure with plenty of people. But as far as just a well-made movie, 2011 is leagues above it. You know, Jason Segel notwithstanding. and deliberate hackneyness notwithstanding. And because, like, you know, I say that. I'm sure the 79 one has plenty of hackney stuff, but it's just of a different era that I don't have context for, so
right,
it's like, for me, that's just like, oh, that's just how movies were back then.
Yeah, and it has a lot. I mean, they have something else that guides that too, is the jokes don't always land in 79, but it does have a lot of that Mel Brooks DNA in it, not just in the people that appear in the film,
but yeah.
the style of jokes that they're trying to tell. They, at the start of the film, when they're at the bar, Fozzie says drinks are on the house, and everyone runs to the top of the building.
Okay, yeah, that was another one. That one I genuinely had a really good laugh at. Yeah. I was like, okay, I love humor from the 70s and 80s, because a lot of it was just so snappy like that, that you could just pull that off and be like, wait, what the hell?
Right.
I think a lot of times nowadays, humor tends to be a bit more on the air of pairing to, not exactly like panning to idiots or that sort of thing, but like kind of idiot humor, where it's like, oh, the main thing that's funny about this is that this guy's stupid. It's like, yeah. No, there has to be more to it than that. It's not that he's just stupid, it's that he's stupid in a funny situation.
Yeah, fatty fall down humor too.
Exactly.
Very clumsy characters.
Yeah.
I see that.
It loses a lot of the snappiness of the Mel Brooks days and of the Airplane days, because that'll always be one of my favorite jokes in Airplane, was like, all right, boys, let's take some pictures, and they literally just start stealing pictures off the wall of the control tower, and I'm yes. like, that's genuinely clever. It's like, I love like good wordplay like that, but you don't see a whole lot of that nowadays. Like, you still have comedy, obviously, but it's, you know, of a different sort, and that the 2011 one doesn't really capture that, because so much of the humor of the Muppets was, you know, humor that has no longer held up. So
yeah, you can notice a little bit of it in the 2011 Muppets, but a big thing about the Muppet franchise, and that stems from what I mentioned about the show, is that it's not so much the idea of the show or the film, but it rather the idea of these characters putting on the show or the film. So in the 79 version, you get like when they're in the church and Fozzie's about to explain the plot and Kermit's like, no, 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 the audience is going to be bored, and they give him the screenplays, which is like a very out of Blazing Saddles type move.
Yeah.
Of like acknowledging the fact that they are in the movie. And that carries over into Great Muppet Caper. Like, Piggy has a breakdown at one point because Kermit yells at her and he's like, oh, sorry, you were talking too loud. You want to take it again? And then they just go right back into the scene. And they don't do a whole lot of that in 2011, but there's a few parts, like where Statler and Waldorf are showing the contract, the original contract to Tex Richmond, and I don't remember the exact quips, but they're like, yeah, the movie's going to be about an hour too long, and then they laugh, you know, the way that they laugh.
Of course. So
that's a big part of the Muppets humor, and that's not something that's really done anymore, because those type of spoof and parody movies, especially from Mel Brooks, don't exist. They aren't getting made.
Yeah, really. And I think they also just kind of hit their peak for quality, because like Mel Brooks had the benefit of being among the earlier people to do that, and that, you know, his comedy was just so punchy that you could pull that off in small bursts and be pretty good. But nowadays, when you see a joke like that, it kind of just takes you out of the action more than anything, where it's like it just kind of brings the the limits of believability. There's a full term for that, but I can't remember the exact wording. But like, right. it brings kind of it to a grinding halt, where you're like, oh, okay, now I'm just being reminded that I'm in a movie. That's fun. I liked that I was getting invested, but now here we are.
Right, and that's the sad thing too, is that like Oh, what is that? The Joe Dante Looney Tunes film? Looney Tunes Back in Action.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that did not do well at the box office at all, but I really liked it because it had a lot of that DNA in it. They acknowledged they were in a movie quite a few times, and then the end of the film, where Daffy's like the hero and people are cheering for him, and then they're like, cut, and everyone starts going their separate ways and going to their trailers, and no one thought that was funny, and that was in 2004. You know, yeah. that sort of died out. I still loved it, but that's not something that is really done anymore. I think you're right. It had its time.
Yeah, and I think you can still get elements of that every now and again in shows once they do it like in small doses. Like I know Steven Universe had an entire non-canon episode where they had a crossover with one of their other cartoons. Yeah,
Uncle Grandpa. I remember that.
Which I think that's really the only way you can do it, when it's like deliberately set up and being like, oh, it's this whole big event, rather than just in the middle of a very serious, well, not necessarily a serious situation, but a very genuine situation that they're in, that all of a sudden bring it to a grinding halt like that. I think you'd still do it, you just need to do it on its own. It needs to be very separated.
Yeah, that's fair. There's not really projects that revolve around that anymore, but you can still get away with elements of it.
That's a good point. But I definitely do like the 2011 one more. It's just like, I really was kind of going into the, like, once they started off with the fucking deliberate whole big, like, whole town goes into a musical number thing, where, like, I can like scenes like that if they are genuinely good, but this one was just so campy about it. I was just like, I literally skipped through it for the most part. I was like, okay, yep. Anyway. I thought it was kind of funny when, like, at the end where they finally left town, all the townspeople are like, oh, thank God, they're gone.
They all collapse and fall down.
Yeah. Like, I thought that was pretty funny. But, like, that from that when that point started, and, like, they had the whole thing of, like, oh, it's establishing this Muppet kid having, like, grown up with a human family, I'm like, oh, boy, this is going to be one of those kind of movies, isn't it? So I was really prepared to be pretty down on it. But as I went along, like, you know, the Walter character really, again, came into his own as a character, the main character for the film, and actually didn't just, like, I was so expecting his portion of the show where, like, he had his act. I was fully anticipating it being some touchy-feely song where he's, like, showing, like, all his growth throughout the movie and, like, oh, how things are different. Mm-hmm. It's, like, showing a montage of how people have grown throughout the course of this. But then they just had him doing a whistling act. That was actually kind of fun. I was like, oh, okay, cool.
He does hit a high note for about 10 seconds.
It's actually kind of fun. It's actually kind of creative.
Yeah, it was great.
So that much I liked. So
he's not the main character of Muppets Most Wanted, but he does feature heavily in it. So
that's cool.
He was a part of their act.
I guess this is something we talked about kind of, again, before the recording, and this is kind of tying into it. We talked about, like, how early on in the show we wanted to talk about, like, why certain things got remade. 90% of the time, though, it's usually cash. But, like, in that same vein, did this movie actually reignite any kind of major love for the Muppets? Because, like, I know they did, there was another, they didn't they have another newer show in the last few years?
They did, and I talked about binging it when Disney Plus came out. It was just called The Muppets. It was on ABC, and it was kind of like 30 Rock, in that it had the original DNA of the Muppet Show, in that it was about all the Muppets putting on a television show, but it wasn't about the show itself. Miss Piggy had a talk program where she was like the host, and she would interview people. But very rarely did they show anything like that. It would be like Gonzo, Rizzo, and Pepe in the writer's room, or Fozzie's dating a human girl, and her parents are not into her dating a Muppet. And Kermit is not dating Miss Piggy. He's dating another pig, and Miss Piggy doesn't like that. It was trying to be like an adult sitcom, sort of.
Okay. That's a little weird, but whatever.
It had interviews like The Office and Parks and Rec too, where it's like, we're gonna chat with Fozzie for a little bit.
Did any of that end up going? Like, is that still going on? Or because I have had no knowledge of the fucking Muppets.
No, it didn't. And okay, here's the thing: it lasted one season for, I think, 12 episodes. The first 6 episodes, everyone liked it. It had really high Nielsen ratings. And then they tried retooling it a bit. The core format didn't change, but the characters kind of did, and the way they were interacting did, and Piggy and Kermit were, like, doing the relationship thing again, and the ratings tanked, and then the show got canceled.
Already. Yeah, like, I just, because I was thinking, like, that was, I had a feeling that that was the purpose of the 2011 remake, was maybe to reignite love of the Muppets, to kind of bring the series back. And then I never heard anything about it, because I remember seeing, like, trailers and everything for the movie when it came out.
Oh, I knew. Oh, yes.
So, like, But to me, that didn't really mean anything, and I think that may have been the case for a lot of people, because a lot of people just didn't grow up with the Muppets. And so it just kind of passed me by for the most part. And then they kept fucking showing trailers for the Most Wanted movie, and I was just like, please stop.
Yeah.
I do not like this.
So that's kind of the thing, is that...
If I have to keep watching the Eagle guy and the one guy from Modern Family compare dick sizes with their badges one more time, I'll lose my mind. Because, like, my God.
Marin is bigger!
It's like he has a badge on under his shirt and everything. Like, that's the size of his undershirt. It's like, what the hell is happening?
And then he has one delivered.
Yeah.
To the office. Yeah. So what I would say to that is that the 2011 Muppet film did work to an extent in reigniting love for the Muppets. It's just that they didn't do much with it. The series on ABC ended up failing. The sequel that they were immediately greenlit to do because the 2011 movie made so much money, it didn't do too hot. I would say that the main thing that was keeping people interested in the Muppets around that time, and probably is the only reason they're even remembered today outside of that movie, would be the internet stuff they started doing. Because they would do the Menomina things on Late Night with Jimmy Kimmel or Conan or whatever, where different celebrities would do the famous Menomina song, and they had the viral video where all the Muppets sang Bohemian Rhapsody, and that got millions of views.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because, like, yeah. It really has just kind of become the thing that I always thought that they were, that they're just, like, this random entities that just pop up every now and again.
And that's kind of what they're going to continue to be, I think.
Yeah, we're going to go into the future. They're just going to be like, it's going to be like all those like post-apocalyptic movies that like think, oh, they must have worshipped these old deities, but they lost favor over time or some bullshit, where it's like, we'll just have monuments of them. And we're like, who are these things?
Yeah.
No one truly knows.
You know what? That is so true, because I saw a commercial a month or two ago for Amazon Fire, and it had Statler and Waldorf in it. And no, it wasn't Amazon Fire. It was like Skype or something. It was about talking to one another because they connected via computer, and Statler's on one side of the computer, and Waldorf. Oh my God. Waldorf's on the other, and they start just heckling each other, and that was the whole commercial. It was for like Charter Internet or something. It's like, how many people are watching the commercial like, what the hell is that?
It's like, what's who are the those point two? Of this?
Old men made out of felt yelling at each other.
Yeah, feels like a Billy and Mandy joke.
Yes, it's very obtuse, it seems.
Yeah,
but so. Yeah, that's probably their future.
Inevitably,
I do want to say one thing. I derided a lot about the Muppet 2011 movie, even though I gave it credit for its plot structure. I do want to say props to that movie for giving such a big role to Uncle Deadly, who I have stated before on the show is my favorite Muppet. I think he has the coolest design. He has like this tattered suit, and he's a gargoyle with all this crazy shit hanging off of his face. And I love his voice. Uncle Deadly is the best Muppet.
He was pretty fun, yeah.
Yeah, he's great. And he wasn't in the first one at all, even though I'm sure he had already been on the show at that point.
Such a strange character name as well.
Uncle Dead. Yeah, I don't know if any of them have identifiers like that. There's Dr. Honeydew, Miss Piggy, and Uncle Deadly. I guess that's sort of a question I can ask you, though. As I'm curious, you didn't have a lot of experience with them outside of, say, The Christmas Carol and now these films.
Yeah.
But if you want to put aside, even if you don't know their name, if you want to put aside, like, Kermit and Miss Piggy, who is your favorite Muppet that you've seen? Oh, and put aside Walter, too. That's why I keep getting confused. Now they have two... Ooh.
You know... I guess Fozzie. He seems pretty genuine.
Fozzie's good?
Yeah. He just seems fun.
Yeah. He says waka waka.
Yeah. That or Beaker. Just because, like, I at least know him from Reputation.
Oh, yes. Everyone loves Beaker, too.
I think I gotta say that's the extent of it. Maybe Animal, but, like, that's also just kind of bland. So.
Yeah, Animal's on a lot of t-shirts. Very much like Grumpy, the Seven Dwarves.
A lot of people who are obsessive with coffee or smoke a lot of weed.
Yes. That's perfect.
Yeah, that kind of sums them up.
There are two other things I want to mention. I did some, because I keep going back to this. Sorry, I love the Muppets. But for the 79 film, I was talking about some lore and history and Beaker. Interesting points for the 2011 one. Pepe the Prawn, it's weird. He doesn't get a lot of screen time, really. The only scene I can think of that he's in is when Kermit goes to Miss Piggy's dressing room to talk about their duet. She reveals that she has a new co-star, and it's Pepe. And he was not in the original Muppet Show. He premiered in the second Muppet iteration, Muppet Tonight. But he broke out after that. He was like one of the main characters in Muppet Wizard of Oz. He had a big role in Treasure Island. People love Pepe.
I remember him at least, yeah.
Yeah, they love him, but he was like not in the 2011 movie at all. And I thought that was a little odd. And the other thing I will bring up is the character of Lou Zealand, which no one gives a single shit about. he's like a nothing Muppet, but he gets so much screen time in the 2011 one, to the extent that when the Muppets go to kidnap Jack Black, they do like that Kung Fu parody thing, and all the heavy hitters are there. You got Gonzo, you got Miss Piggy, you got Fozzie, you got the Swedish Chef, and then you got Lou Zealand holding his boomerang fish. No one gives a shit about Lou Zealand. Why is he featured so heavily?
Oh, yeah, Swedish Chef. He's also my favorite.
Oh, yes, he's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah.
But, yeah, that was just me ranting about a nothing character.
I mean, that's fine. You know more about it than me.
With the voice of Crazy Guggenheim. So pointless. He even gets, like, a lot of lines in the musical numbers in the sequel. Someone who's writing the two new movies must have really liked that character.
Ah, well.
I
guess it doesn't really matter much anymore.
No, he's literally in the past.
Yeah.
If he shows up in a commercial for Fios, I'm going to be pissed.
Just like, oh, well. I am Ozymandias. Look upon my works in despair.
So we're probably reaching the end of this. We both already pretty well talked about what our favorites were. I still prefer the 79 version. Even though it has a lot of flaws, it is not cohesive. And, I mean, the Muppets in general tend to break this rule, but 79 breaks it a lot. And that is that in writing, you can use coincidence to get characters into trouble, but not to get them out of it. And the Muppets love to get out of trouble through coincidence. So, and just good luck. Yeah. And 79 does a lot of that. It's like, oh, we read the screenplay. Oh, Orson Welles just gave us a contract. Yeah. Oh,
at that point, that's not even coincidence. That's just like Orson Welles is just chill.
And I guess you can kind of get away with that because it's a movie that the Muppets are writing inside of another movie. So whatever. But
yeah.
Still, the heart of it, the music, and just the feel. I've already made it known on my show that just the mood that a lot of movies from the 70s put out really, it warms my heart, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the 2011 one is better made and it better suits the characters of the Muppets, but I still prefer the 79 version.
Yeah.
And I can't give you any real strong logical reasons why outside of the soundtrack.
I had a feeling that'd be your end opinion, like, which is acceptable. You know, you have the context. So, and then obviously for me, it's the 2011 one. 'Cause you know, in the end, I picked the better made film.
There you go.
So why not? Yeah, it was pretty good. You know, Jack Black was fun for what little time he was in there, and it was an actual plot. So it wasn't much of one, but it was one.
Oh yeah, did you love that scene with Jack Black, Sam Eagle, Link Hogthrob, and Beaker? They did the barbershop quartet and sang Nirvana.
I like the bit where had Beaker pop up with an axe. That was a good quick bit. It was just like, hello, 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 me.
that was a good bit.
I love like quick look reaction shots like that where everyone's like, the fuck?
Yeah.
That's a quick get for me.
Yeah, the movie does have some good jokes.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that kind of sums up my thoughts on the matter. I'll never really fully understand the appeal of the Muppets, but I think the time for needing to know their appeal has long since passed.
I'd say that's apt. Unless they do some other TV movie, I don't see them coming back in any strong way. You said, I see them being a staple of the zeitgeist because they used to mean a lot. And even now that they don't, there's still going to be that mark that'll never truly go away because at one point they were a big thing. So
yeah, so it's just like it's really just going to be the strangest thing. Like, we'll never really stop seeing them, but there's never really going to be a point where they reboot them. It's just going to be like, oh, everyone knows these guys. It's like, do we though?
Yeah. That's going to be the next monument in Washington. It's going to be Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem. Etched in marble.
What's that? That's such a fucking crazy, like, character names and everything.
Yeah.
Like, that really does seem like someone came up with a name before the thing.
He's got teeth. Let's name him Dr. Teeth.
Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem. Yeah, sure, let's go with it. Move it.
You know what? I was gonna make a joke about that just now. Like, Dr. Teeth, let's call him Teeth because he has teeth. Well, everyone has teeth, but then I thought about it, I was like, I think he might be the only Muppet that has teeth.
Yeah.
That's why his name is Dr. Teeth.
Yeah, you might be right on that one, actually.
I've never considered that. Huh. Well, Sweetum's got some fangs on him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well.
Anyway.
So, the last
I know none of these characters.
The last bit of this, I guess, is, do you have any recommendations that are slightly similar? They don't have to be Muppet-related, but...
I mean, like, I really tried probing my mind for it, but I was like, I really don't think I do. Like, these are very... If you're going into these movies, like, I can believe other movies we go into, it's because, like, oh, you've heard about their reputation and just in as a staple of this genre or whatever, and maybe you were disappointed, maybe you liked it, maybe you want to see more, maybe you want to see something better. I don't know. In this case, this is such a movie that is of itself that I cannot... think of anything other than just other Muppet movies. Muppet Christmas Carol is a masterpiece. I will not even exaggerate when I say it. Like, people joke about it. It's a genuinely incredible movie, just like how it's made. Like, Michael Caine playing completely straight faced to these ridiculous characters is such a joy in everything and such a fun rendition of Christmas Carol that it's so hard not to recommend it. And then obviously Treasure Island as well, and like, in my opinion, to a slightly lesser extent, but still really good.
Christmas Carol is Michael Caine is fantastic. They made a strange decision but a welcome one with Gonzo. He plays Charles Dickens and like frequently yeah. comments on the book he's writing, and Statler and Waldorf play dual Jacob Marleys. They're Marley and Marley. That is
that one. Yeah, that
fantastic.
It's just a fun film. Like, that's pretty much the only thing I could reasonably recommend. Like, maybe Little Shop of Horrors just to see more of Jim Henson's work. But, you know, we've already done that on the show, so it's hard to recommend it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such an of itself thing that I can't say for certain what else I could conceivably recommend with it.
I mean, Christmas Carol, Treasure Island are two good ones that you can pick. Other, you know, go see other Jim Henson projects. Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas has nothing to do with Muppets, Sesame Street, or any of that, but it is surprisingly heartwarming. It's a very good holiday film to watch. Some of the Sesame Street movies. Elmo in Grouchland is fun. Follow That Bird, which is about Big Bird leaving home and trying to find himself. He's on the road.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, and that's a lot of fun. Oh, speaking of which, don't want to forget that. Carol Spinney died at the very end of last year. He was the performer as Big Bird, and he played Big Bird in 1979's The Muppet Movie.
Oh, yeah.
They pass by him on the side of the road, and he says he's going to try to break into public access, and that was Carol Spinney. may he rest. Sad. Yes.
Oh, well.
But, yeah, I guess that's the end of this. We don't have much else to say.
I can't reasonably say so, no.
All right. So, with that being said, go ahead and email us at theyremadeit@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram at theyremadeit. And follow us on Twitter at itremade. We'll try to be getting posts out on those. We took a bit of a hiatus. I'm trying to retool it and think of other things to do with it. And I think I have an idea. So that'll be coming up when probably the day this goes live.
Mm.
Which I forget when that is. The first week of February, I think, based on when this this new schedule hits.
Gotcha.
But yeah, email us ideas, thoughts on anything. Follow us on any of your podcasting platforms. We got Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, all the good ones. Podomatic.
We are everywhere. We are Legion. Yeah, just always good to hear from y'all, you know, in whatever capacity you can manage it. Just throw a letter at our doors, if in which case, what the fuck, how do you know where we live?
Get off of my lawn.
How are you 30 feet in the air? As always, I am your host, Stuart.
And I'm your host, Jacob.
And we will see you again for the continuation of the new series. Thanks for coming on back to us. Have a good night.
Yes. Hopefully it'll be Muppetational.
It's over. How'd you like it?
I don't know. I slept through the whole thing.
Well, you didn't miss much.